Ben James and Jason McKittrick, brought to you by CryptoCurium.
Good evening, folks, and welcome to another edition of Learning Lovecraft. I'm your host, Jason McKittrick, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the traveler on the path, Ken James.
What's going on, guys? Still here, still kicking.
Still here, still kicking. Early in the journey.
Early in the journey.
Level one.
Yeah, there's been some changes to what happens when I read, but we'll get there shortly.
Right. So tonight, we're discussing Polaris by American weird fiction author H.P. Lovecraft, which will be the author of all the stories we're doing. And so here we are at the third story that we're covering, early on the path. And kind of want to check in with Ken, because here he is, because we had our first two stories. We started with The Tomb, and then we followed that up by Dagon, and then we kind of switched it up a little bit. Here we are with Polaris.
Yeah, I...
You okay?
Yeah. My text was, what the hell, Polaris? That was... it's wholly different than the other ones that I've read, and this new thing started happening to me while reading it, because I get in my zone, I put on my, classical dark music to have the background as I read, and I started to kind of slip into forgetting that I'm reading fiction. And like, I guess it has to do with the way it's written, or the timing of it, or maybe even the words or the descriptions, or how descriptive it is. I started kind of this is an account of something that has actually happened to someone, but third and fourth story.
Well, so. it's definitely you're a beginner here, but we're also doing it in order, so Lovecraft is kind of a beginner here, so right. Here we are at this story, and now we're starting to see how this is a great example of Lovecraft's obsession with his dreams and the idea that the dream world is more real than the real world.
Yeah, I that was the kind of thing that kind of sucked me in. Like, does this guy have some kind of knowledge of something that? And these are things that even I would say 15 years ago I would text you about of ideas that I was just having. Like, I feel like I'm going somewhere in my dreams, and you're like, dude, you're just sleep apnea. I got to check that. But like, that's these are kind of concepts that like I've toyed with myself. So when reading this, I was like, huh. Maybe there is something to this, but once again, I'm reading fiction.
Sure. Well, any good fiction is based on truth.
Exactly. So the blend is kind of starting to disappear. What was starting to disappear while reading it?
Right. And I think that another function that kind of Lovecraft uses here is, and we've talked about it in an earlier episode, but it's that verisimilitude, kind of blurring the what's invented and what's real by putting them right next to each other.
Yeah.
So that's certainly something he's definitely always been interested in is, you have these dreams and then you have the real world. And if you're someone that the real world is just awful and you're someone that's a dreamer, that's very fantastical dreams, which apparently he was, these are the things you're going to cling to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once again, I'm getting better at the words that he uses, and
he'll hit you with some curveballs.
Yeah, he will. And public school system reading. I'll go over a sentence, and I'm like, wait a second, and I'll go back over like three or four more times to be like, am I getting this right?
Yeah.
And especially with this one, my focal point on trying to kind of grasp and wrap my mind around of what's being said, because the language is such different than I'm used to hearing or even reading.
Right.
I've read, Poe stuff. I've read all this other stuff. This.
Right. Well, having read Poe, that'll probably help you a little bit, because especially with these early stories, you have a lot of influence from Poe.
Yes, but also there is a difference.
There certainly is.
Because there's themes and words that he keeps using in everything I've read so far that are just like, I'm like, it kind of like you start to detract from what you're reading, and I start like wondering why these are the recurring words, and then I'm like, whoa, I got to go back and read this paragraph again.
Right, because it's cool that you're kind of getting there too with, like, you know, here we are in this third story, you know, we're saying once again, it's that you're seeing there's kind of a duality too, because, like, not only is it just the story he's putting forth, but then there's also these philosophies that he kind of has that he puts forth. So you're trying to stay on the story, but then you're also like, oh, what is this thing he's talking about?
It starts drifting. My mind will start drifting, and then, like,
almost like you're dreaming,
right? And then I'll have to, like, come back in, you know, out of my thought process.
A lot of these, and this is his early stuff, and this, I would even say that this is one of his lesser stories. Obviously, it's early, and we're going to get into it in a second, but you got to kind of digest these, and a lot of these, even the short ones, and the long ones, wait till you get to the epic ones, you read them, and you get a different thing after you read them a couple times. It's like, okay, well, I digested that philosophy, so now I can read this story again. I know who he is a little bit better. Now I can read this again, and it's like, oh, okay. And the great thing about this, because this is this journey that we're going on here, is that all these things that we're wading through now, because we're going to go through some weird stories here. And when I say weird, maybe not the best quality, but these are things, oh, we're going to say, oh, he pulled this in from, you know, this is from Polaris. Oh, this is from Dagon. This is from the tomb. He uses these things later on. There's definitely a buildup. You can see that, like, he built upon these themes and these things. So I think that it's great to read these, even though you may finish some. There's some that are just, you know, not great, honestly. But he still uses the good parts. And later on, you're like, oh, okay, this is him working this out. And then you come later on. There's going to be stories later on, like Polaris. There's a lot of influence on his later story, The Shadow Out of Time, which is incredible. And you're like, oh, okay. Let's see.
Hey, man, I'm still wrapping my mind around these last two. So,
So before we dive into it, I just wanted to, for every episode, I'm going to do this little kind of bibliography function, because I just want to give an idea to everyone where we're getting our stuff from. First up, we have two from... The Man, H.T. Joshi. We have an H.P. Lovecraft Encyclopedia with David E. Schultz. And then also I Am Providence, and this is taken from the first volume. And then also I have, because it's a great book and it's just a lot of fun, Tour to Lovecraft from Ken Height. These are just great. I like how he breaks down all the themes and just has a very, with all due respect, nerdy kind of... point of view on it, and it's always great. And
nerds are the best people. So.
To the best people, and he's a wordsmith, so I always love his barks. So let's dive into it. So, Polaris, right?
Yeah.
Written in 1918 and first published in the December 1920 issue of the amateur journal The Philosopher, it is the story that introduces Lovecraft's fictional Necotic manuscripts, the first of his... cursed grimoires. So everyone thinks Lovecraft the Necronomicon.
Yeah.
This story is the first story where he introduces a cursed tome, book, grimoire, whatever you want to call it. So the Necotic manuscripts. That'll come up later. We're not even going to go down that road. We're not going to say that that's, you know, the elder thing. excuse me. The Yithian library that exists in, you know...
Sure.
Australia.
I will, you know... Yeah. I'm sure I'll get there. Yeah. I'm still waiting in the kiddie pool over here.
Good. You're there. It's all good. This is also his first story for him to introduce his first ancient civilization, the Lomar, I believe, as they're called. First to have that, which is also another cool first. So we have this story where it's this, as is usually the case, an unnamed narrator describes his nightly obsession with the Pole Star and his recurring dreams of a city under siege, right? So this narrator struggles with determining whether his reality is real or if his dream is the true reality.
I have the same thought, you know, going in.
And it's kind of cool that he was able to put that on you by just reading it.
Dude, it was, man. Yeah. And keep going. I'm sorry. I will get to it.
Yeah, a story written 105 years ago. So this is also there's definitely some autobiographical elements to the story, and a lot of people have connected this with Lovecraft's feelings that he regretted that he was not able to enter into World War One. Like he was more this guy, the guy who was, oh, I have the eyes,
right?
I'm the observer.
Him saying that his friend, who was the general,
yeah,
was like, you're a weak man, like, so I'll give you kind of like an easier task and we'll appeal to your strengths.
Right.
Where I'm sure some of his friends were like doing those things like, you're not that kind of guy.
Sure.
You're good at this, and this is what you're doing.
Yeah, you faint sometimes. Yeah, maybe you just,
But, strange fainting spells.
So, the story begins with the narrator describing the night sky as observed over long, sleepless nights from his window, in particular that of the pole star, Polaris, which he describes as, quote, winking hideously like an insane watching eye which strives to convey some strange message, yet recalls nothing save that it once had a message to convey.
Now, before we go any further, I want to say one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
With these two, and specifically this one, it was the shorter of the two, I had no idea what I was in for here. Like, I thought, from what I know of Lovecraft and from what I've read of the other two, you know, we're... And I already know the cosmic horror aspect of it. This one threw me through a loop, right? So, like, I was just like, you know, I was starting and I'm like, it kind of, I don't want to say it was an emotion, but I felt uncomfortable while reading it, if that makes sense.
Okay, sure. Maybe like, at, you know, out of body.
This one I did, this one, not the next one, but this one I did, it was making me a little uneasy in a weird way. And I don't really have, you know, a finger to put on it and what did that, but just that it happened.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. So then our narrator, he describes the night of the aurora over his house in the swamp and how on this night he first dreamed of a city of marble lying on a plateau between two peaks with Polaris above in the night sky. He then describes after a while observing motion within the houses and seeing men beginning to populate the streets, conversing to each other in language that he had never heard before, but still, strangely, could understand. However, before he could learn any of this city, he awoke. Right? So many times more, he would dream again of the city and the men who dwelt within, and then after a while, the narrator becomes tired of merely existing as an incorporeal observer and desires to establish his place within the city, simultaneously beginning to question his conceptualization of what constituted reality, and thus whether this was just a dream or whether it was real.
Yeah.
So is he dreaming, if I'm understanding... Is he dreaming his real life, or is his real life the waking dream?
Yeah, so it gets to that point where the question is, which is real, right? Mm-hmm. But I think, and later on in the story it gets to that, I think the star has everything to do with... what is real. So the waking life with the star that's shining into his room that he has, that I'm obsessed with, that's kind of his prison, right? Like that, not a prison, but like that's kind of the star kind of keeps him under its watchful eye, and he's not like a prisoner or anything, but it becomes kind of his prison because he's trying to sleep, and then when he finally gets to the sleeping, he's almost free of that star that his obsession is.
Right.
So that right off the bat, I got that, like, when he sleeps, he's free from his earthbound fears and obsessions. I have to say the word again because he can't stop looking at the star and it bothers him. It messes with him.
Right.
And then when he goes to sleep, he goes to this land.
Right.
Where they're speaking a language he doesn't know, but he understands. It seems like there's an order. Everything's marble. It's beautiful, and it's far from the watchful, terrifying eye of the star that just shines through his, basically shining on all of, I guess, his insecurities as his, you know, living, breathing, awake form. If that makes sense,
possibly. I mean, there's definitely an unclear. There's certainly some unclear parts of this. I mean, it's, and I think it's on purpose, because there is a dreamlike quality to the way that it's written, because he's awake, he's asleep, he's awake, oh, I don't have a body, now I want to have a body because I want to inhabit this city. Oh, I don't know who these people are, and they're speaking, and I've never heard this language, but I can understand it. It's like that dream logic, like almost like, yeah, you know, when you have a dream and they say, oh, well, you can't see writing in a dream, so when you...
Yeah. Well, it's also in a dream where, like, you know who a person is, but they don't look like that person.
You're right.
Like, if I have a dream, I'm like, oh, that's Jay, but he didn't look like Jay.
Right.
Or, oh, that's a weird concept, too, that I just...
Right. Or you dream of this place, and, like, even if in your dream it was a... I've had it before where it was like, I dreamt of a place I'd never been to, because I was like, in the dream I had gone somewhere, but it was just made up of parts of places I had been to.
Yeah, this one kind of, I'm not going to say messed me up, but, like, yeah, my dreams are weird and vivid.
Yeah.
And I've had night terrors. I've had, you know, all kinds of stuff, I guess. I don't know if it's imagination or me clearing out the things from the day, which, you know, I always attributed or learned to attribute what dreams are. But, yeah, it gave a new thought process of what these unanswered questions are, of these emotions and feelings and places and scenes and all this stuff. Right. So it was, yeah.
And then trying to sort it.
Yeah, and trying
to
sort
which.
It. Yeah, it's a heavy task to kind of try to put it all into one thought.
Right.
So, like, it's scattered, and I think that might be what the anxiety was coming from, or the uncomfortableness, was the drawing from all these different places, going back and forth, and trying to connect the mind to where it is.
And I think it's probably safe to say that maybe Lovecraft was struggling with these ideas himself,
and
put it on paper and said, well, you know, as you're going to do, he's going to express it through his art, that it's, I'm writing about these things because I myself haven't, you know, resolved these issues.
Yes.
So... Sorry, okay.
Yeah.
So, continue on. The one night, while listening to discourses of those who populate the city, the narrator obtains a physical form, not as a stranger, but as an inhabitant of the city, which he now knew as Alathaway. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Sounds right to me.
I listened to a few other people pronounce it, and I both said Alathaway, so we'll go with that. Lying on the plateau of Sarkis in the land of Lomar, which was besieged by an enemy known as the Inutos... Inutos? Yeah.
The yellow ones, or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, Lovecraft.
Yeah.
Kind of sounds like Inuit to me. I don't know. So, while the other men within the city engage in combat with the Inutos, the narrator is sent to a watchtower to signal if the Inutos gain access to the city itself. Within the tower, he notices Polaris again in the sky and senses it as a malign presence, hearing a rhyme which appears to be spoken by the star. So, before we get to the thing, it reminds me of... in a different way, almost like how the tomb was talking to Jervis.
Right.
But that was like almost like a more of a ghostly kind of past, almost human kind of thing. Whereas this is coming from the cosmos.
Yeah, well, that's where the whole like connection of, I guess, his realms.
Yeah.
I was starting to kind of show where it's like almost the as is above, so is below kind of aspect of it, where it's like,
yeah,
like, the Earth realm, if you would, with the tomb,
yeah,
it's like the spectral,
sure,
you know, all this kind of stuff, time travel, all that, but it's in that world.
Right.
Whereas this one, it's like, it almost seems like he's traveling with, you know, when thinking upon the star sleeping, that is putting him to another dimension out in space, sort of the race, but it still has that same, like, where one is time, the other is...
Yeah.
Planet, it almost seems like.
Sure. I think it's open to interpretation.
I'm just here trying to connect the dots in my own head. That's
So there's this rhyme that that the star seems to speak to him, and it says, "Slumber watcher till the spheres, 26,000 years, have revolved and I return to the spot where now I burn. Other stars anon shall rise to the axis of the skies. Stars that soothe and stars that bless with a sweet forgetfulness. Only when my round is o'er shall the past disturb thy door." Stars talking to you.
Yeah.
I love that even this star that most people see and like, oh, look at that beautiful celestial body. No, Lovecraft's like, no, it's telling me stuff.
Well, that, and that's where it kind of started.
It's an evil influence.
Yeah, I started trying to get like, I was trying to wrap my mind around it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what is this guy trying to tell me here? Like, and that's where I was kind of like, I'm like, sweet, the star. And then I was saying like the communication of like it peering on him in the one realm. And then it appearing in to the other where he can understand it. Right. Where in that same realm he can also understand this language where he finally got a body and became a person.
Right.
So it's like, is the star responsible for that transformation during the sleep?
I think he's uncertain to its meaning. Like, sure. I think even he is uncertain, and that's when he falls asleep.
Yeah.
And then he falling, you know, he doesn't complete his duty to guard the city. And then he awakes, and the narrator finds himself back in his house by the swamp. But he's now convinced that his life isn't real, but a dream. But he can't awaken from this dream now. Right?
That's what I have to say to that.
So, So it's kind of implied, and I'm pulling from Ken Height's Tour to Lovecraft, it's implied that the dream world of Lomar is our own world 26,000 years ago, and hence that time and consciousness and history are cyclical, that the soul is not individual or even time-bound, and that even today, the intellectuals are nodding off on the peaks while our civilization enters its terminal state. Yeah.
Yeah, scholars figure this stuff out, and like, man, I'm three stories in, and like,
this is one of the, and I think I mentioned this to you, because we were texting back and forth about it. This is later will get cataloged as to one of his dream cycle stories,
right,
where it's like clearly influenced, possibly, most likely. Influenced by a dream that he had, but then also he puts these very heady topics in there where it's like, this is a dream, but it's like, it's almost like he's ruminating over it and he's putting it on the page, and maybe he hasn't fully.
The weird thing about it. Yeah, the weird thing about it for me is that, like, the words on there and the feelings that it gives you are, or so much of the feelings that you have in yourself, and those weird thoughts are just. When your mind starts to murmur and you start to get in those thought pulses of like the whatever. I don't even know how to describe it, but it put me there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm like, I'm trying to read this, but it's like doing that like, whoa, I know this feeling.
Yeah.
Because we all struggle with that. So like, I don't want to say, like you said, like maybe he was struggling with this at the time. He had to have been to have put it. Yep. On paper this long ago, and for it to still invoke in me a thought process that only comes out of like certain kind of brainwave cycles for myself.
Certain types, but it possibly could be universal for everybody.
Right.
Because people must come to this conclusion often. When I was reading this again, it kind of reminded me of, you know, when you're falling asleep and you ever get jolted out of sleep
all the time,
and then you're like, but the thing you were thinking about while you were about to fall asleep is like, what was that? You know what I'm saying? So like, you wake up from it and you're just like, that's what kind of, it's like, you know, your mind is like, you know, the rational part of you says, all right, this is my mind drifting out to sleep.
Yeah.
You're like, but if you entertain that, which clearly Lovecraft has, he's entertaining that day. Maybe it's not my mind drifting off or not working anymore because I'm going to sleep. Maybe it's I'm drifting to this other place where this is how it is. And that's an interesting idea to entertain, because if you entertain that and just continue to entertain that down the years, I think your brain would just continue to do that. And I wonder if we're kind of like, this is a good, you know, magnifying glass into Lovecraft's almost process, where like, this is where he was getting his, he would just let it go. You know what I mean?
It almost, like, you know, we've both been big fans of Japanese and samurai stories, but there's something in the story that reminds me of Gakuryu, where it's those kind of stories where like the meaning is almost hidden, so it almost becomes an exercise, maybe, that the things that are hidden in the words are almost like a way of like, latch onto that, do it more, and you'll get more out of it. And it's unsettling to have someone kind of put put a fiction story or story into a way where it invokes some weird brain chatter. I wish I knew how to describe where the thought is, or that nebulous part of our brain, which is just like this, like, I guess the word is like malaise, this like weird thought that you only can get to in certain times, like you said, when you're jolting out of sleep, or when your brain's subdued, or when you're just like fixated on doing something and you're on kind of in autopilot and your brain starts to kind of do its thing and, like, you know, unravel a little bit.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's kind of spooky. It is kind of spooky for me.
I think I know the quote that you were talking about from the Hagakure. This is a book from Edo period Japan. It was almost like a manual for young samurai. It gave them a bunch of
Hagakure. Sorry, yeah. I said that wrong.
It means hidden by the leaves. It was like a guide to life, but for the younger guys. It was almost like something they would give to, like, hey, here's a bunch of sayings and a bunch of philosophies and ways of acting to keep yourself as a, you know, as a good samurai, like what you're supposed to do. So it's a bunch of quotes, it's a bunch of philosophies, a bunch of couple anecdotes, but it was made famous by in the last, what, 20 years, if you ever saw the movie Ghost Dog with Forrest Whitaker. But there's a quote in there, and I think this might be the one you're talking about, where they say, "It is a good viewpoint to see the world as a dream. When you have something like a nightmare, you will wake up and tell yourself that it was only a dream. It is said that the world we live in is not a bit different from this."
Right.
That's not far removed from what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Here in this story. At least to some degree.
And it's hard where your brain tries to work to pin something down.
And you can't.
And it just keeps, like, going.
And you know what? I think that might be at the heart of the story. That might be the feeling he was trying to capture.
Sure.
Like, here's the real, here's the dream, and now he might be stuck. And, you know, the influence of the star, though, where it's, that's, you know...
Right, but that keeps that if there's something in my mind that this whole time I go back to the beginning of him talking about the star.
Right.
So as I'm reading all this, trying to figure out what's going on, it keeps flashing in my head the star.
Right.
Because the way he described it as being this menacing, you know, observer of him, and it's anxiety inducing.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, that's definitely a quality, and if he can put forth that quality by, what was this, 3 pages?
Oh yeah, it was a shorter one.
You know, I think he, whatever he was trying to do, he certainly put something forth, and it's, you know, like I said before, I think it speaks to maybe the universality of what we're talking about with this, you know, this idea of the, you know, the feeling that this dream kind of uneasiness that it brings forth.
And it's crazy that, once again, we're talking about a fiction story that is invoking all these real feelings, these real, like, thought. So, anytime I've had a panic attack, it's because you can't break out of the cycle of thought, right?
Right.
You're in trapped in this loop. But when you look, you can look at it from the way his writing is and describe it as, like, yeah, which is real, it's going back and forth, but then, once again, you get pulled back from the thought process, because it's like, ah, man, I'm awake again.
Right.
Or, like, oh, that star is still looking. Or, oh, this over here. So it does that point here, like, it keeps having you point in different directions while your brain is still doing that weird loop, and it's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. All right, so that's Polaris in a nutshell.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as we can put it in a nutshell. According to Joshi, Polaris was in part the result of a controversy over religion between HPL and his good friend Maurice Mo. In a long letter to Mo from May 15th of 1918, HPL notes that, "Several nights ago, I had a strange dream of a strange city, a city of many palaces and gilded domes. Lying in a hollow betwixt ranges of gray, horrible hills, I was, as I said, aware of this city, visually. I was in it and around it, but certainly I had no corporeal existence." So the story was then presumably written shortly after that date. So you know, I mean, this is a guy who was very much in touch with his, like, dreams and was very interested in, like, how, you know, the two relate.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing that we came across is that Lovecraft himself frequently remarked on the story's apparent stylistic similarity to the work of Lord Dunsany. We'll come across him more. This is someone that he was greatly into. But he would not read for another year afterwards. So there's some stylistic similarities, but he hadn't read the guy yet.
That's weird.
Yeah. But possibly the style of the tale was derived from prose poems, which themselves partly influence Dunsany's style. So it's almost like Lovecraft is pulling from Poe because he read so much of him, but the other author, it sounded like the other author's stuff because he had Lovecraft had so much of Poe's influence on him that it was sounding like this other author's stuff who had kind of gone into this dream world kind of stuff too. So it's
definitely weird. Yep. If you start paying attention to this kind of stuff and you start exploring,
mm-hmm.
Writing words, and it same thing comes kind of from music.
Yeah.
Where if you let your mind drift,
mm-hmm.
When you're, you know, in mode, all kinds of stuff is back there or out there or wherever it is, and
mm-hmm.
Some of it comes out differently. Some of it, like, I don't know. It's so odd that I'm like, this is real. You know,
yeah,
it's weird because it is a fiction story, but we're learning from, you know, everything you're pulling from.
Well, you can certainly trick yourself. Yeah. That's for sure. Yeah. And this also reminded me of years ago. God, I think I was in college. I had this book on lucid dreaming. To try to help yourself, you know, have more memorable dreams and be more in control of your dreams.
Yeah.
And there was this one exercise where it was like, start, you know, kind of start, if you want to have a type of story, start the story in your mind, tell your story as you're falling asleep, and maybe it can help inform that story. And that worked not at all. I had the weirdest nightmares, some of the most vivid nightmares, from doing that.
Yeah.
Like weird ones where family members like getting like in horrific accidents, and yeah. I'm like, oh, I want to have a, like, it was like, oh, let's have a dream about, you know, exploring this ancient civilization. That's literally, and that's something I literally try to do one time.
Yeah.
I'm very interested in that kind of stuff. And it turned to that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that don't work. And then the times that it didn't do that, I just had really unsettled bad sleep.
Yeah.
And I was like, ugh.
Yeah, I
so I stopped.
When I was younger, from I'm gonna say 12 to my mid 20s, I was an insomniac, and I couldn't.
Yeah,
I just couldn't sleep.
Oh yeah,
and
here.
Yeah, and I looked into lucid dreaming. I looked into all that kind of stuff, all the stuff that helped. And back then, actually, melatonin didn't do anything for me.
Mm.
It didn't do anything, and I would like I would. Recommended dosage, upper dosage, timed dosage through the day, and it didn't work. And there was a point where my night terrors got like so bad that I don't even want to describe them. But there was always a feeling of it was real. There was real that I was somewhere, because I can tell a difference in these dreams.
Okay,
and some of them I'm like, no, like this is it's a little different. And like to read this all these years later, when melatonin works now, you know, and like I can actually sleep.
Yeah,
it's like, what was I going through? I don't know.
I think it's a testament to, you know,
the writing,
the writing, and maybe, you know, just the core of the concept that he was getting at, whether it was an early story or not, but also that, you know, once again, going back to, there's a point where, you know, dreams seem very real, and I can see why, you know, certain points in history or just certain types of people can be like, this is the real thing. Look, I feel this when I sleep.
Yeah.
My dreams feel way more real. And then there's, you know, then you'll see it's like dream affirming things in the real world. It's like, yeah. I dreamed this.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's like, so this is wonderful.
Yeah. Honestly, for a short story, for how short it was, it's already gotten a big reaction out of me, which was, I wasn't expecting. I really wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'm a little like off put by this one.
Yeah.
And
okay. It's a quality. Yeah,
I enjoyed it and I liked it, but it really invoked an emotional reaction, and I think that's what we're here for in learning Lovecraft, right? Is to see, like, you know.
I think it's just, I don't think we've planned it out so much. Sure. I think we're just going on the journey to see where we're going.
Exactly.
And this is where we are right now.
I'm checking in, is basically what I'm saying.
No,
this one, yeah. This one really, it really weirded me out.
Okay.
It really did. The next one.
Yeah.
Kind of calmed me down.
Okay.
But this one, like, the questions in that between.
Right.
You know, like, with my own life and my own. Stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was like, wow, Lovecraft was like, hey Ken, take this punch to the stomach, you know, like I'm on my couch drinking a glass of wine, like, ugh.
Yeah. Hey, I think that's great, and maybe that's also just a like I said earlier, a testament to his just outside of the box thinking.
Absolutely.
Because these are kind of things that, you know, everything that's out there today where there's like, you know, something that's can be lucrative or can be mined, that's made by someone. They're like, how can we turn this into a movie? How can we turn this into a show? Yep. How can we turn it? And you look at this and it's like, what do I do with this? Well, nothing. It's a personal thing. You read the story and it does what it does for you.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, you want to break it down one way.
You know, like art.
You know, like, exactly.
Yeah.
It elicits emotional response. If it does that, I think that's art. So I think that this story, however you want to break it down, because you could also look at it a certain other ways, you know, there's that racial component for whatever reason, but looking at the way that we're looking at it here, I think we're a little closer to what he was trying to go for. I mean, you could definitely focus on the other stuff, but I think what he was going for was this thing, and the fact that he has this ancient civilization with these two types and whatever it was, it's kind of somewhat, I think it's somewhat irrelevant.
So is there any more exploration of what the star was doing or was? Is there any scholarly, you know, connection? Or is it just that I guess, was his focal point?
Yeah, I mean, it's this, you know, the star that just, you know.
I also think, like you were saying, maybe the star was his guilt.
It could be. I mean, you know, it speaks to him and has him sleep. And it's, you know, I really can't say. I mean,
yeah, that's the fun of this, isn't it?
Where
it's like, I can't. What can I say?
Yeah. No, I mean, it has this hold on him, which I think I said earlier about how in the tomb, this is another kind of thing where. I think they're almost the same kind of idea, where it's like you have this thing or this intelligence from elsewhere. This time, that time it was in the tomb, talking to him and influencing him.
That one was more friendly in the tomb.
Right, right. Yeah. This is this cosmic thing. It's a star that's winking at him and keeping him awake, and like he can only sleep menacing on cloudy nights. It's this menacing. It's obviously a negative influence on him, and for whatever reason making him sleep, you know, it's you know, it's just maybe it's just what it is, you know.
Yeah,
it's just
it
a function
be.
Of the cosmos. I don't know,
could be. He's like, I'm just gonna put this in there and mess with everyone.
I mean, because even in the story, he's uncertain to them, and when he hears the, you know, when he thinks he's being spoken to, that you know, little passage where, you know, the slumber watcher told the sphere is 620,000 years, he doesn't really know what it means, and he just falls asleep. But then he wakes up and he realizes he messed up, but then he's back in his house in the swamp, and he's convinced he's in the life that he's in then is the dream, and then he can't awaken. So for whatever reason, the star had this effect on him.
Yeah.
And he's just a man out of time.
Yeah, one thing's for sure.
I don't know if why is even the there's gonna be a lot of discussion on that coming down the pike as we go down and down the way. I don't know if even why even comes into it.
Yeah, I don't know, but what I was gonna say is one thing is for sure that it's all by design. Like,
yeah,
like a lot of times writers will stumble into something and they'll go with that.
Sure.
It seems like this whole thing was thought out to just mess my head up. Mm-hmm. But, or any reader, or a representation of his own thought process.
Yeah.
And it's great. I've read anything like this in a long time that made me feel weird, you know?
And you're done reading it. You're like, I don't like it.
Yeah, well, no, I liked it, but I was like, let me just text Jerry.
Sure, yeah, cause yeah.
To make sure we're all awake and alive.
Yep.
And, Brittany woke up while I was reading it. And
yeah.
I was like, this is weird. Just stop. Yeah, just stop. This is weird.
Yeah.
Music's on. Just stop.
Yeah. Just. No words, only emotions.
Yeah, only emotions right now.
All right. Well, hey, I like the weird kind of like unsettled spot.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I like it. And that's it.
And yeah, like even talking about it right now, because mm-hmm. it's put me back to reading it and the thought process of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know what to do with it. I don't know. I'm not unpacking anything. I'm not, you know, going over everything. Like no. I'm just.
I think we said it. I think that maybe that's
yeah.
the goal. Like
yeah.
you came, you read it. This is how you feel.
Yeah.
And then yeah. you go and then you
and
move on.
Yeah, and he's like.
Yeah,
you know how you're feeling right now?
Yeah,
yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know that's
he's like, yeah, that's how I felt.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's yeah. weird, isn't it?
Yeah,
where's that part of your brain?
Right,
like, where are you now?
Right, and I think that also speaks to the, I guess the goal. Yeah, I guess that's the right word. The goal of a weird tale is the mood.
Right,
it's the mood is always the goal. Yes, there's, I mean, plot is actually secondary, but the mood is the goal. And if he gave you this mood and put forth this mood from yeah. reading it. I guess it has to be a success.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is most times in any kind of thing, you have, like, the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be a monster or mm-hmm. a villain or
yeah.
all this stuff.
Yeah.
In this, the bad guy
yeah.
is that what's in between. Like, that, like...
Yeah. Or the star, which
ethereal,
could... Yeah.
Sure, sure.
Which could represent destiny or, like, it's just the sure. hand he was dealt or
sure.
something.
Sure,
yeah.
But, like, I think mostly, like, the just the villain is that uncertainty of what's in between, like, that, the dark matter or whatever you want
yeah,
to call
yeah.
it. That,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
weird, amorbious, like, like, it's weird, man. It puts you in a weird spot. It really does, in a weird thought process.
Well, then I say HPL, mission accomplished.
Yeah, right.
105 years later.
And I was so blindsided by it because it was such a short story. Mm. And I was like...
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, yeah. whoa, wait.
Yeah.
Three pages?
Like you just shot yourself in the neck with a dart?
Yeah, I was like, wait.
Yeah, get water out, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean... I'm glad the next one was of the same kind of you know, ilk.
Yes.
But that one made me, you know, it kind of like took me away from just like, you're in your head. You know? This one is like,
yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
You're in your head. The next one, you're like, I want to get in someone else's.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, no, it's good Polaris. Polaris gets a thumbs up, but I also fucking don't like it. And that's all I'm going to curse on this episode.
Nah, it's all good. All right, man. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did, but I hate it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if you guys are listening to us, clearly you found us some way. I don't know if you found through me and my social media, or maybe you found just by, you know, on Instagram randomly. But hey, you know, give us a shout out. Let us know how we're doing so far. Yeah. It's only a few episodes in. Hey, if you disagreed with any of the things we said, I want to hear that. Or hey, if you concur or something like that, give us a shout out. We're most active on the Instagram.
Yeah.
So give us a holler over there.
And if you have something to refute.
Yeah.
All of my feelings, please say it to make me more comfortable with the story.
Yes.
If you're like, no, this is it, and tidy it up, put it in a nice little bow for me.
Yeah.
I'd love that, because yes. I have a road ahead of me.
Please invalidate Ken's feelings. All right, folks. Well, I guess that's the end of this episode. So thank you for joining us for another edition of Learning Lovecraft. I've been Jason McKittrick.
And I'm Ken James.
And we'll see you on the other side of sleep.